Oh, yeah, it's a beautiful day. Hello and welcome. This is Lou Ryan, your host for Self Help Works Real Talk Radio, the support group that's whose purpose is to help you move through the challenges and barriers that may be standing in the way from you achieving your goals and objectives in your life. Self Help Works is a company that's been helping America live a healthier tomorrow since 1979. We're one of the oldest organizations that have been in the health and wellness industry. And as you probably know, if you're here through your health plan or through your corporation, we have a whole series of programs. It's the Living Life series. Living Lean, which is a lifestyle management nutrition program to help you deal with the emotional relationships that you may have with food and eating. We have Living Free, which is a program for smokers. Living Easy for stress and resiliency. Living Smart, a program designed to help you control alcohol, your relationship with alcohol. We have a new program called Living Healthy, which is a nutrition program, and one called Living Well, which is a diabetes management program. So if you're here through the internet and would like to check the rest of the programs out, go to selfupworks.com, take a look, read about them, see the science behind them. And if you are in an organization and you know these programs are available, let your friends and family know that they're also available to them as well. So again, welcome. As I had mentioned, that this is a support group, and that means that we both have responsibilities. What yours is to call us. The telephone number is 1-866-748-1505. That's 1-866-748-1505. Is that the correct number, Brandon? That's it. So feel free to call that. Ask us any questions. Share with us what's going on, the good, the bad, the ugly, the whole nine yards. And our job is to actually help you do that. So while we're waiting, we have a guest on today that is a specialist in obesity and in eating disorders. And I can't wait to introduce her. But in the meantime, we've got a couple of people, and we're going to be able to help one of them out here that is looking for some tools to help her stay on track this fall. This is Diane, who has a great vision. By the way, she's in the Living Lean program, and what her vision is to be able to come home from work and confidently walk past the kitchen playing music or running to inspire and feed her soul to transform her relationship with food and eating so that she can be lean and free. So what her real vision is about being able to come home and walk past the kitchen without dealing with her day stress through food, I guess. So it's real important that what Diane does is to get a little clear on that vision so that it can be exciting for her. But what she's looking for is some concrete tools to help her stay on track this fall. It turns out that she teaches, and going back to teaching full-time, she doesn't want to fall into old patterns with food and emotional eating, which she was in prior to the summertime. So that's really an interesting concept, because the reality is there are different environments in which the urges or thoughts about getting involved in our old behaviors will reoccur. For instance, for those of you that are going through any of our programs, you may have flatlined your desire to smoke or to drink or to eat your main munch. But if you were to go on vacation and have not been on a vacation since the program started, what you'd find is that you would probably have cravings for cigarettes or alcohol or those foods when you're on vacation, because the last time that you were there, you were still a smoker, drinker, binger, whatever it might be. And so those triggers will come up. And what it does take to be able to transform your relationship with these items in those situations is really quite easy. So, Diane, what you need to do is to realize, okay, you've been working the program fine during summertime because you haven't been teaching. And now that the difference is, the change is that you're going to be going from one environment into another environment. And what you simply want to do is to anticipate that. We have a visualization exercise that it's in your calendar. It's always also on the website. It's called a weekend visualization. And essentially what it takes you through as an exercise for you to see yourself coming home, see yourself having an urge to eat or to binge, see yourself pull out your creed, see yourself go through the creed and acknowledge that you'd like to go ahead and break your plan and binge, that you have a choice, what the real choice is as far as your vision is concerned, and then continue through the creed. Do that 3 or 4 or 5 times until you're very comfortable with it, till you see yourself easily going home, walking past the kitchen, playing music, going out for a run, and feeling inspired and feeling in control. And do that again. Do that for about 3 or 4 days, and you'll find that once you do that, it won't be a problem for you anymore. Okay? Good. So what we're going to do now, we had another caller that's on the line, but it looks like they didn't wait around. So what we're going to do is to give our guest a call, because we have only one line working her, and this is probably the number that you're looking for here. In the meantime, if you would like to call us, 1-866-748-1505. That's 1-866-748-1505. Today we have a very special guest who I'm sure we'll have a very dynamic conversation with. Her name is Dr. Carolyn Coker Ross, and she's an author. She's also a speaker, but more importantly than that, she's a pioneer in the use of integrative medicine for the treatment of eating disorders, which would be obesity and even other addictions. I can't wait to really hear what her approach is about. She's famous. She consults for treatment centers all around the United States. And she is very, very passionate about what she does. Her passion is to treat and promote self-healing and transformation on the deepest level, which I'm sure we are totally aligned with, because that's what our purpose here is at Self-Help Works. And her approach probably is a little bit different, and that's the successful use of integrative therapies. Dr. Ross is also an author, and she has 3 books, including one called The Binge Eating and Compulsive Overeating Workbook, which I hope she'll tell us about. Dr. Ross, good evening.
Yes.
Well, welcome. Thank you very much for taking time out of your evening to join us. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from the beautiful city of Denver, Colorado. Thanks for having me on your show, Lou.
Oh, it's our pleasure. It's our pleasure. Thank you for being here. So you're, tell us a little bit about what your perspective is from the standpoint of transformation. When you work with people, what do you see needs to take place in order for a person to effectively and permanently deal with what I guess the medical world calls eating disorders? You know,
or obesity and eating disorders. The eating disorders include anorexia, bulimia, and binge eating disorder. And then not included yet in that is obesity. But my approach really is a whole person approach. So it's really about dealing with issues on the physical, the mental, emotional, spiritual, all of those different levels. So body, mind, and spirit. And using different modalities to do that, whether it be therapy or the use of dietary supplements or, for example, testing for food sensitivities, because many people, especially with weight problems, have food sensitivities that have been undiagnosed for, you know, maybe their whole lives, and that contribute to their obesity. So we're looking at all of the different levels. Many people with weight issues and with eating disorders and other addictions also have strong histories of trauma or family of origin issues that contribute to their eating problems. In other words, they're eating to deal with pain from their past.
So tell me how your perspective from the standpoint of how those past experiences actually contribute to obesity. So I get the self-medication. So what you're really saying is that individuals are self-medicating the parts of their emotions that they don't understand with food or with some other addictive substance.
Well, you know, I think on one level it is self-medicating. On a deeper level, these issues contribute to low self-esteem, which can also affect your eating behaviors. And then I think probably on the deepest level is just the kind of core beliefs that come out of traumatic experiences, you know, beliefs such as no one will love me, or I'll be hurt if I'm too attractive. That's something that women in particular who may have been abused or raped may have developed, you know, overeating as a way to kind of make themselves subconsciously less attractive and therefore theoretically, you know, less likely to be harmed. So I think there's multiple layers that you have to look at. It's not a simplistic issue of, okay, well, you're just eating to squash your emotions, although that does come into play.
So at what level do you believe, what level will you work on with a person who may, let's say that's their command statement, that if I'm attractive, I will be raped or I will be abused. So where do you, you know, what's your advice to, there may be people out here that are listening today, because a large percentage of the people that take our programs have BMIs over 30.
Okay.
So you know, that might be of value.
I think the thing that's important for people to know is that you have to start wherever you are. So what I mean by that is you may not be ready to work on, you know, old traumas or past history of abuse. So you may start by working on self-esteem issues or working on how you use food as a way to cope with feelings and fears and other emotions. And so you start kind of more superficial and then work towards the deeper layers. You know, in my bio that you read out, you said that I believe in transformation on the deepest level, and I do, but I also recognize that can take time. There is no, you know, pill that can remove people's memories of, you know, of trauma. And so it's something that has to be worked on over time. And people often that I work with often, you know, their self-esteem is so low that you have to start with that to give them kind of hope for the future that they can change their behaviors. But I can just give you a quick example of one of my clients who had an issue with anorexia, and she found that just by recognizing and being more aware of her emotions that she was hiding from, that her behaviors became less frequent. And the deeper you go, the more impact, obviously, it will have on whether you're overeating or restricting or, you know, dieting or binging and purging or whatever your behaviors are.
That's very, very interesting. Yeah, because a person could have an entire lifetime of therapy and work, and you're never going to uncover perhaps all the issues that may contribute to low self-esteem. And self-esteem is clearly an issue. If you know, I believe that we have several different aspects of self-esteem in our relationship with life. You know, it's whatever we want, feel that we want, deserve, and deserve to have in any relationship that we might have. So in some areas our self-esteem can be high, and in other areas our self-esteem can be very, very low, based upon...
That's really important. And I think of self-esteem kind of like a muscle, that if you haven't had experiences in your life that strengthen that muscle, all things, you know, like many of our eating disorder patients get sick for the first time when they go off to college just because they don't have the skills. They didn't learn the skills to take better care of themselves or to know how to balance, you know, partying and studying. And so every time that you're able to have an experience where you kind of overcome an obstacle or face a challenge and have, you know, learn some skills on how to manage that contributes to your self-esteem.
Yes, absolutely. And where do you think personal responsibility comes into that whole scenario?
Well, I think personal responsibility is something that we'd all like to think could change the world. But to be honest with you, most of the patients that I deal with, especially those with obesity as their problem, they want to change. That's not an issue. And many times they try for most of their lives. I have patients in their 60s and 70s who've been on, you know, hundreds of diets and lost weight and you know, tried to keep it off. So, you know, I think the motivation is there, but we don't really have a clear picture of what it takes to get people to lose weight and maintain their weight loss. There's plenty of diets that'll tell you, yeah, you know, well, you can lose 50 pounds in 2 weeks. But they never go on to here's how you keep it off. And there's so many factors, whether it be, you know, that people work in sedentary jobs or, you know, just the proliferation of fast food restaurants or the level of stress that most of us are under. You know, all of these things contribute to a person's ability to maintain their weight loss. So personal responsibility, yes, I believe in that, but I think it's complex. It's not a simple thing of, as many people say, just eat less and exercise more. I've had that experience many times with patients where they have struggled, and until you determine that they are sensitive to gluten or they have dairy allergies, they can't lose the weight. Or until you help them learn how to manage their stress better, they are unable to keep their weight off. So I think we need to really look at the different factors that contribute to this rather than thinking it's all to do with willpower or just, you know, just do this one thing and everything will work out.
Yeah, totally aligned. And I think that's what taking responsibility is. It's that I want to live a better life. I deserve to live a better life. And I intend to figure out what I need to do in order to have that happen. So it's the searching soul.
Yeah.
Because I do have a problem with saying there's a, well, it's a fast food industry's fault, or, you know, that I don't think blame is, you know, it has anything to do with personal responsibility.
Well, good. I think we're very aligned with that. And I also think that blaming the person who's struggling with obesity doesn't help either. I know that there's kind of a culture of blaming and shaming children and adults who are obese, and I've had just horrific reports from some of my patients of people coming up to them in grocery stores or theaters and actually saying really mean things to them, and I don't see how that enhances any of our lives, and it certainly doesn't show any compassion for someone who may be, you know, truly struggling with a problem that doesn't have an easy solution.
Well, absolutely correct. And I mean, that's the challenge that we have in this country with the value system that a lot of people operate from. And unfortunately, that's about changing an entire culture or segments of our population that start to have respect for first of all, probably themselves. They probably have self-esteem problems, the ones that are actually doing the bullying in that respect. But it's unfortunately, we don't want to have the people who are challenged with obesity to have to wait for the culture, their society to change.
Well, no.
Because it's never going to happen.
That's absolutely true. Yeah. But I do think it's important to get the word out, especially to parents. I have so many of my eating disorder patients who say to me that the first time that they started focusing on their body was when they heard repeatedly that their mother was complaining about her body, or they were told by a physician, a pediatrician, that they needed to lose weight and they were put on a diet. And so I think it starts really young. And if we can, you know, at least start shifting the message to our children. I mean, we have children who are as young as four who won't make friends with a child who's overweight, won't play with toys that depict, a toy figure that is overweight. So it's, you know, it's starting so young. And once it gets started at that young age, I mean, how on earth is that going to change when the person is 20 or 30 or 40? So it's not just about discrimination against those who are overweight. It's that, you know, that kind of thinking can affect all of us, and especially our children.
Yeah, absolutely. And that also goes with the people who are challenged with the weight problem as parents. I think what transformation is about relationship and changing the relationship, first of all, that people have with themselves relative to what they want and deserve and the kind of life that they want to live, is to have a different conversation with themselves, but also changing the conversation that they have with and changing the relationship with food and eating. Is that most people do eat for the wrong reason, unfortunately. You know, that we see with the thousands of people that go through our program, 95% of the people that take our programs that are overweight, whether it be chronically overweight or just overweight in general, do not eat for what food can do relative to nourishment and contribution it can make to our spirit, to our mind, to our body, to our souls, to our energy, to the way that we live our lives.
That's kind of something that's a learned behavior as well. You know, we have thousands of commercials in the media that talk about, you know, food is love and food is comfort, and if you're having a stress day, just eat a bag of chips. And so part of that is something that we're enculturated with. But I agree with you. What I ask my patients is not why you're eating something, but who is the person who's eating that bag of chips? Is it the person who has the commitment to lose weight, or is it the person who's, you know, fighting her emotions, his or her emotions, and is eating for emotional comfort? and just taking a pause to kind of ask yourself, you know, who is it that's wanting that chocolate cake or whatever it is you want? Not that chocolate cake is bad, but if you, you know, if you're eating it because of emotional reasons, then that has a different effect in the long run.
Yeah, I love it. I thought when I first read some of the material that we had in your bio that we were going to be operating from different places, but I think we're very much aligned. And I think I think that's an absolutely fabulous way of putting it, is that who is the person that's eating this? Is it the person that's eating for comfort, or is this a person who's eating for their future, for their health, for their wellness, you know, and for the things that they want to achieve in their life relative to the, you know, health and wellness? Part of what we get people in touch with, one of the difficult things that those of you that are going through Living Lean at this point in time, is that usually you can change your relationship. You can learn everything we teach you and actually change your relationship with the foods that you know that you have an emotionally dependent behavior relationship with, whether it be chocolate or binging or overeating. You may have handled that. But the challenge is that there's usually a long period of time between you actually winning at changing that relationship and what you're looking for relative to weight loss.
Right.
And so what happens...
And that's the big issue.
It's a big issue.
I struggle with, too, because I work with people all over the world, you know, via Skype and phone and so on, and I see the same thing. They may be making progress in terms of treating their trauma or being more aware of their emotions, but they still are attached to, but I've only lost 15 pounds.
Sure.
You know.
So we got to get, it's so important to get out of that picture. And it's important.
I think it's important to have a tiered set of goals. So maybe the first set of goals are changing your relationship with food, and maybe the third set of goals is working on weight loss.
Yeah, well, that's good. You know, that's good. There's no question. I'm referring back to the question that you pose your patients is, who is the person that's eating that chocolate right now? Is it the part that's
right.
aligned to your vision, or is it the part that's aligned to being a victim of whatever's going on in your life right now? And so what we have people create for themselves, we call it the gap. The gap is between changing your behavior and your way of thinking, let's say with just chocolate as an example. So we have people work on our programs with a relationship with specific foods or eating patterns
mm-hmm.
that they believe are contribute to the majority of the excess weight that they have, or if they're unhealthy to their poor nutrition. And so let's just call it chocolate. So they may deal with chocolate and it no longer calls their name, but they haven't reached their goal weight yet. And so every once in a while, the voice out of the past, that part of them that had that emotionally addictive relationship to chocolate, rears its ugly head and says, boy, you got a long time going before you're going to actually reach that goal weight. You know, you're never going to make it. You fail in the past. So it's to recognize that that is not who they are at this moment.
Right.
That is a voice from their past that they lived with before. And what we do is we have people actually identify themselves that in this gap before they've actually reached their physical goal
mm-hmm.
is that they take on a new identity, is that who they are is the possibility for living lean naturally.
Oh, that's wonderful. I love that.
So that's who they become during that gap. So what they refer back to is when they hear that old voice come up, they say, that's not me. Who I am is a possibility for living lean. You know, that's the voice from my past. That is not me any longer. That's just the voice that's come in my head. And then we give them little tools. And those of you that aren't in that session yet, hang on, you'll be there, because it's critically important for you reaching your long-term goals until you actually become who you are is naturally living lean.
Yeah,
and that's
exactly.
That's
and
the context that you operate
future.
Out of.
You have to have that future self who you can look forward to and have hope of becoming to give you motivation to continue. I call that the hook. The hook is something that will take you through the difficult times, the ups and downs, you know, the disappointments and so on, to get to the place where you are, as you say, living lean naturally.
Right, yeah, exactly. Yeah, and unfortunately, we talk about the word responsibility. And it's easy for all of us, because I think there's two things that all of us have become addicted to out of past training, like you allude to, relative to parents and culture and the way we're brought up and advertisements and all that, is we're all addicted to some degree to temporary comfort.
Mm-hmm.
And we're also
the quick fix.
Yeah, the quick fix. And so I tell people, you're not addicted to food, you're addicted to temporary comfort. You know,
yeah.
The reason you eat that chocolate is because you use it to either avoid or get rid of every unwanted, uncomfortable situation in your life, including the thought of not eating the chocolate, which is uncomfortable.
Yeah.
So the thought of not eating is uncomfortable, so you eat it so you don't become uncomfortable. But and also the second is being a victim. And most people look at responsibility as blame, and where it really isn't. And what responsibility, in my opinion, and what those of you that are taking the course need to realize is that a lot of us were brought up in the past, the first part of our life, when things weren't working, we blame everybody else. And then we realized that that didn't work. And so the pendulum swings, and then we start blaming ourselves. And so, and that's the ultimate victim, is when we're a victim of who we are as an individual. So,
and that's pretty typical, especially for people who've had any kind of abuse and neglect.
Absolutely. Yeah, the guilt.
Or trauma.
Sure.
That, you know, they become their own perpetrator, their own worst enemy, because that voice of whoever it was who hurt them becomes incorporated into their own voice, and they stop. They don't realize that it's that old voice and it's not who they are. So that's part, like in my book, The Binge Eating and Compulsive Overeating Workbook that you mentioned, I spend a lot of time on several chapters talking about how you can identify the effects of abuse and neglect in your life and trauma, and identify core beliefs that you're still living with that you may not be aware of. And that can be very powerful for people.
Yeah, absolutely. See, I think we're really talking about two subjects here, and I think it's probably good timing for you to write another book. And
I have another book that is being shopped right now, and it's really about this book is specifically on weight loss or weight management, and it's about satisfying your soul instead of the scale.
Oh, that's very nice. The one that I was talking about is the moral obligation of the, you know, I think there's a moral obligation for the food industry to start recognizing what they're doing to this culture, you know, by continuing the methods they have. I think it's a moral, you know, moral obligation for our society to educate people on nutrition and to educate people on what responsibility is and things of that nature, that we have a moral obligation to teach people how to create high self-esteem for themselves and what that really means, and you know, how to teach people how to replenish their souls.
Like, well, I can't agree with you more. I think prevention for these issues is always the best. And, you know, if we had some of the things you're talking about, starting in our homes and then moving into schools and all the way up through high school and college, and also education for parents, because a lot of parents themselves, you know, came from homes where the eating was poor, their parents were obese, and they, you know, just doing what they've been taught to do.
Hey, we're not going to go into the schools and teach the kids the things that they need to be taught at home. I mean, the conversations, it's important to change that conversation, that perspective with the parents first.
Yeah, I agree with you. It does start in the home, and if we could find a viable way of doing that, I think that would be very effective.
Yeah, it's a toughie, though.
Yeah, it's a very, I mean, there are, you know, some models for that, but they're few and far between. Yeah.
And that's why those of you that are in the programs, you're either parents or you're going to be parents one of these days, most likely. So it's part of what you can contribute to society is by changing your conversation as you're going through these programs and the support and transforming your life, to then being able to make that contribution to the rest of your family and to the people around you, because it starts with conversation. And if once you change your conversation about who you are and about what you want, deserve in your lives, and the conversation that you have about food and eating or alcohol or whatever it might be,
right,
it's, you know, pass that message on.
Yeah, and it's very effective when it comes from within. I have a client now who has done that with her own daughters and has helped them to you know, she was able to lose weight and keep it off, and she's then moved on to helping her daughters do the same. And so that can be the most effective of all.
Yeah, absolutely. And to the point you made earlier, this is the way, I don't know how much you know about our programs, and again, this is a
just
support group.
On your website, basically.
Yeah, so I want to, this is a support group, so I want to, at times you'll see me, I want to go back to talking to the people that are listening, is that we have what are called key to success cards. And for those of you in the program, that's the most important element of the program, is that those cards are really a key to your success. And what our goal is that by the end of the training, is that the conversation, what we call cognitive trained response, the conversation that you have automatically that comes from your subconscious, whether it comes from your parents' training, it doesn't matter where it comes from. It's a conversation that's dysfunctional that has you eat for temporary comfort rather than for the support of your health and well-being, is that by reading those cards, every time you think about your main munch or every time you think of your COs, that it's important to instantly read that card and use the conversation and the words on that card rather than the beliefs that are in your brain at that moment. Because the beliefs you have on your subconscious are the ones that control your emotions and your behavior now. It's the empowering ones on these key to success cards that are going to change your cognitive response. And that's what our goal, Dr. Ross, at the end of the day, is to have people's cognitive trained response in the relationship with emotions, food, and eating shift.
That's wonderful.
Have a change. Yeah. So tell me what your point of view is about the fat phobia as a problem with medical professionals. I mean, that...
Well, sadly, you know, about half of physicians have a lot of bias towards overweight patients, and about a quarter of nurses do as well. But it's not just with healthcare professionals. It also goes down into teachers and, you know, people that you're interviewing with for a job. You know, there's a study that even within the family, 70% of obese people have been teased or ridiculed by a member of their own family about their weight. And so, you know, it's as you said, it is a societal bent, and unfortunately, when it comes to healthcare professionals, it can actually keep people from getting preventive services that they need because they're worried about being, you know, criticized or ostracized in a medical office. So that's kind of a critical thing. And I think also with teachers, you know, many overweight children have been weighed in front of other children and teased by peers, and nobody takes up for them. So it just continues that cycle of shaming that just makes people want to eat more instead of eat less. It doesn't motivate people to lose weight. It actually does the opposite, and it can contribute to things like depression and anxiety, you know, other mental health issues in our patients with obesity.
Yeah, absolutely. Lower self-esteem, and then people feel that there's no hope when they come from a place of no hope. They have no vision. They have no vision. There's no goal. Why even bother?
Nothing changes.
Why even bother, right?
Yeah,
because it takes exactly. You know, when we're feeling a victim of ourselves or someone else, it's impossible to have goals and objectives that are very exciting, unfortunately. So how do we? I mean, that's a great start. So, you know, it's you know physicians and practitioners in this area really need to acknowledge people for the bravery that they have in coming in, because that is a consequence. And I think it's clear that people who are obese or addicted to other substances need to realize that stigma is one of the consequences of being obese.
Yeah.
And that's just the way it is, and they probably aren't going to change that. What they can do is change themselves in spite of that stigma that's out there.
Yeah. Well, I think that's true, and that's why we need to have, you know, supportive systems like what you're talking about in your Living Lean program, where people can go to get the kind of positive reinforcement that really helps support their weight loss and weight maintenance. I think that's really important, and that's why Weight Watchers has been as successful as they've been, because they do offer that same kind of support system.
Yeah, so I mean, what are you doing anything in the area? What do you recommend the average person when they go into their doctor's office? I mean, is there advice that you give your patients? You are the doc.
I think it's very important for anybody to be proactive with their doctors. The biggest complaint that I hear of obese patients going into a doctor's office is that they're a chief complaint is ignored, and that doctor spends all their time talking to them about losing weight. And I think it's great, just like, you know, we were taught in medical school to, when a smoker came in, to talk to them about quitting. But you also need to address them, their whatever their problem is. If they're coming in for a sore throat or, you know, pain in their joints or other things, it's not always just related to their weight. And so if that issue does come up, I think it's important for, even though you may be feel a lot of shame, I think it's important for you to confront your healthcare practitioner and say, you know, that's not what I'm here for, and although I appreciate your advice, I would really appreciate that you address my complaint that I have today. And it's important to look for a physician who is willing to work with you and partner with you. And that's whether you're overweight or not. But if you find someone who you don't feel comfortable with, then vote with your feet and find someone else.
You bet.
You know, there are enough physicians out there that eventually you will find someone. And there are a lot of organizations that physicians can belong to that may, like bariatric organizations that may make them more friendly to the person who's struggling with the weight issue.
Yes. Why do you think this, I mean, I know one of the questions that often come up when we talk about, why do you think this fat phobia is so prevalent in our culture? I mean, what do you think the source of it is?
Yeah, I think it's kind of what we talked about a little bit earlier, which is the real focus in our culture on thinness, you know, that if you're thin, you're thought to have great willpower and, you know, to be very goal-oriented and very achievement-oriented and so on. And if you're overweight or obese, you're thought to be kind of lazy and not have those qualities. And it's just really, you know, kind of a stupid bias, because over 70% of why people are thin or fat has to do with genetics. And that doesn't take away personal responsibility or the importance of, you know, changing your relationship with food. But certainly if you are a person who has the genes that you're going to be thin, you're not doing anything different than anybody else. And many people who are thin are less healthy than overweight, some of our overweight clients, because they just take for granted that they're, just because they're thin, that they're healthy. So they don't necessarily eat healthy. They don't necessarily, you know, stay more active, et cetera. So you can be healthy even at a larger body size up to a point. And certainly as you're going through the process of learning to change your relationship with food, it's very important to focus more on eating, you know, more fruits and vegetables, for example, and being more active no matter what your size is. And that's what the Health at Every Size movement promotes. And I think that's a good place, certainly for many, many people to start, so that no matter what your size is, you can be, you know, you can be healthy. You don't have to wait until you're thin in order to, you know, eat healthy or be more active.
I think
it's just a cultural bias that we're struggling against, this desire for thinness.
Right. And, you know, that's a great point. And that's why that question that you have your patients answer, and I invite all of you listening today to ask yourself that question as well, is who is eating this food right now?
Right.
And who's reading this menu right now? Who's making this decision right now?
And
if we can eat for our health, if we can say it's a
part of that is really being grounded in your body. I always tell my patients that the body is really the reservoir of all the wisdom you need to change your relationship with food and also to lose weight. And most people think that, oh, if I just know enough about food, or if I just know enough about, you know, weight loss, then I can do it. And that never works for very long. I mean, you can have a lot of knowledge. I mean, most of my patients know more about calorie counting than I do anymore.
Sure.
But in terms of what really makes a difference is being able to be mindful and grounded in your body in order to do that. So, you know, taking the time before each meal to take a couple of deep breaths and, you know, really connect with your body and listen to the cues that your body is giving you about what to eat. And because that your body's unlikely to betray you. It's the mind that's more likely, the mind and the emotions that are more likely to betray you.
Well, one of the things that I worked with my kid as he was growing up, and he didn't like it a lot of times, but it seemed to work. he's probably the healthiest person in our family right now in all his habits and patterns, which I'm really proud of him for. And he would come, and this, the mothers out there and fathers that are listening to this, my son would always say, but I don't like that. And I said, it doesn't matter. I said, eat it for your body, not for your mind.
Yeah.
And if you can choose to eat this for my body, it's like, I'm doing this for my body. And you want to go out on a weekend and have a good time, do that for your mind. Mm-hmm. But 90% of the time when you're having your breakfast, your lunch, and your dinner, eat for your body, not for your mind.
That's a good way to put it. I like that.
Yeah, and you know, it's a simple thing that I think that all of you can do to realize that. And the higher your self-esteem, the more times than not you're going to, if you're coming from the space of eating for your body, which like you're saying, health at every size.
Yeah.
If you're eating for your health, you're going to find that the size will change.
And I think also for parents to model good behaviors for your children. You know, even if you're struggling on your own, if you can kind of use your kids as a motivational factor. That if my kids see me being active, then they're more likely to be active. If my kids see me, you know, sitting on the couch after work every day, then that's what they take as the norm. And so, just, you know, simple things. You don't have to go in Colorado. You know, we have a lot of families who climb 14ers. Which are 14,000-foot mountains together. You don't have to go to that extreme, although Colorado until recently was the healthiest state in the nation. But even if you just take your kids to the park and walk in the neighborhood, you know, just doing some regular activity gives the message of this is what we do in our family, which is to stay active.
Exactly. We brush our teeth every morning. We wash our face every day. We exercise every day.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it should be that.
We walk
normal.
And move.
Yeah.
Well, Dr. Ross, this time has gone very quickly. Could you please give us your website and tell us the name of your book again and find a way that people can learn more about you?
Sure. My book is called The Binge Eating and Compulsive Overeating Workbook. It's available on Amazon.com. It's also available through my website, which is CarolynRossMD.com, and that's Carolyn, CarolynRossMD.com.
So that's CarolynRossMD.com. The name of the book is Binge Eating and Compulsive Overeating Workbook, which describes a whole person approach to treating this disorder.
Yes, and it's been a pleasure to talk with you, Lou. I really appreciate you having me on the show.
It's my pleasure, Dr. Ross. I hope we get to meet personally one day, and
yeah.
I hope you'll consider doing this again. We'd really appreciate it, and also appreciate you taking time out of your evening.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Have a great evening.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now. So that's Dr. Carolyn Coker Ross, nationally known author, speaker, and expert, and pioneer and integrative medicine for the treatment of eating disorders, obesity, and addictions. Check her out at her website. And in the meantime, you have that Key to Success card that's with you right now. Read it every time you think of your main munch or your thought about having alcohol or whatever it is that you're working on in this in these programs. That is your key to success. And showing up is 90% of the battle. So make sure that you do go to each of the sessions every day, and you will find your life just absolutely transforming. This is Lou Ryan wishing you the best in health and happiness. See you next week.